Hi everyone, and welcome to Ajari Talks 2024. I think 2024 is the year of a new awakening and self-awareness. And for me, my word is leadership. What does it mean to be a leader? What does it mean to guide a team? What does it mean to be so busy trying to do effective work and at the same time trying to be an effective leader in the workplace? And for this conversation, the perfect person, the person who is leading me through my personal journey of leadership is Catherine Igathe. Catherine Igathe is the founder of and managing director of Autus Solutions Group. She founded it after a long career in insurance, and we're going to talk to her about that. We're going to talk to her about her career going forward and how she's managing to chart her way through leadership management. Yeah. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for being here, Catherine.
Yes, and typically Kenyans say Happy New Year. So
Happy New Year.
Yes. Great.
Tell us about yourself, Catherine. What were you like growing up? What were you like, you know, what were your ambitions? Where did they take you and where have they taken you so far?
All right, great. Thank you very much for hosting me. And, you know, especially in the beginning of 2024, feeling energetic and rested. And I hope that the audience have also taken a time to rest and reflect what has been going through them through the years.
Yeah.
So a little bit about me. I had a fantastic childhood, I would say.
Fantastic. That's not a word that people use very much when they're describing their childhood.
Yeah. And I was very playful. I guess I was privileged to, you know, be raised in a family that was open, you know, with siblings that I could, you know, relate with, and a very loving family.
How many siblings?
We are five of us. Yeah. I'm the middle born.
Okay, so am I.
But we behave like a firstborn, I guess.
So do I.
Yeah, so I had a great childhood, playful. I was cheeky. You know, I really remember my childhood, and I think what I would take that out of that is just being given the freedom to be who I really wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I say that because it has laid a great foundation for me, for who I have been throughout, you know, my career journey.
I mean, that is such a profound statement. If you think about it, not many people can say that as a result of their childhood, they were able to then be themselves in the workplace. I think a lot of us have had childhoods that have really affected the way that we are in the workplace, not necessarily built on that. So that is an amazing statement to make.
Yes, absolutely. And I think why for me this is profound and I mention it is also the reason why I began Auto Solutions Group, or I went into training and not even knowing that I actually used to train people throughout my career.
Yeah.
Because I knew that it was a privilege for me to have that freedom, and some people didn't have that freedom. So I wanted to give them the platform to know that they could gain back that freedom,
yeah,
you know, through their career journey.
Amazing. Yes. Okay. So then how did you get into the insurance business? Because I think people should know that you were the manager director of Allianz for a very long time. Yeah. You climbed through the ranks. How did you get into that? What was the start of your career like? What was a young Catherine like?
Right. So,
or younger, should I say?
Well, I went through public schools in Thika. I'm born and raised in Thika. So I went through a public school in Thika and then went on to a typical public school in Nyeri,
yeah.
Chinga Girls High School. So a shout out to Chinga Girls alumni.
Oh, good.
And there are a lot of good things that came out of there. I didn't like it. I didn't like boarding school at all. I didn't like being away from home. But hey, that was our life then.
Yep.
4 years of boarding school, hard work. It was cold. You had to meet different kind of people, you know, from different backgrounds and you know, trying to, you know, navigate and having relationships with them.
Yeah.
And also getting results out of that. I wouldn't say I was the A student.
Yeah.
I wasn't the A student.
That's good. Be honest.
Yeah, I wasn't the A student, but, you know, I was the average, you know, B student. So I really had to work hard. I'm the kind of people who had to read and, you know, and work harder than most people. And I think that also carried me through my work journey, because then I didn't take things for
granted. Yeah, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then left high school and joined USIU. So
yeah.
I'm a USIU graduate, International Business Administration. And then when I graduated, went off to look for work like everybody else. And well, my first job was with there was a company called Trade Bank,
yeah.
Which
fell through the wayside.
Yes, mm-hmm. It did. And my job was a salesperson. We were supposed to sell credit cards, and it was so hard at that particular point in time. And I quit after 1 week because the kind of leadership I saw there, I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
Because our head of sales used to come, read for us some sales things, or this is what you're supposed to do. I can read. You know, teach me something else.
Yeah.
I can give me those notes, but teach me a skill.
Yeah.
Take me to the field.
Yeah.
Do something. And within, I think, you know, 1 week I decided I'm going to quit, and second week I quit, and I told my father I've gone back home. He said, what? Yeah,
I mean, that's quite brave, given the fact that a lot of people are looking for money. You know, the money is key at that stage, right?
Yes.
But absolutely. You were more important. You were more interested in the skills that you would learn in the workplace.
Yes. So a week after I met somebody and I got employed by an entrepreneur who was starting a medical insurance company. And I was employee number one in that company. So I had the privilege of having to set up every single department.
Yeah.
In you know, in that organization,
yeah.
And it grew to quite a large organization, Mediplus, that was competing pretty much at that particular time with AAR.
Okay,
and grew through the runs, and by the age of 28, I was head of operations, leading three departments.
Wow,
customer service department, operations, and the underwriting department. That was really exciting. And in when I was 28 years old, I decided I think I need to move into a bigger organization. And that's when I moved to AIG.
Okay.
And when I moved to AIG, I went in as, they called it head of customer service, but frankly, it was head of sales. And I was leading a team of salespeople. And that's where my journey, really, my true career journey began. And took that experience that I had. It was almost like a demotion-ish.
Yeah.
Then I was leading, you know.
Well, you had three departments at Mediplus, yes. And then now.
And then come back into heading sales. But then I was like, this is a multinational.
Yes.
And it has, it all depends on how I set myself up. So I went in, headed this sales team. They grew quite a bit, quite a lot, actually. And what I didn't know is that through my career journey, I had this passion of developing people.
Yeah.
So I developed this in-house team and then went out to be, you know, every 2 years, frankly, I got promoted into a bigger and bigger role, head of distribution and marketing, and looked after, you know, the entire, you know, I would say sales and distribution portfolio, brokers, agents, bank assurance,
yeah.
Started other channels of distribution, became creative. And the beauty with the multinational is that then you're also engaging with other countries as well. So learned from other countries. I got a chance to go to Malaysia and India to see what they do, came back and implemented that. And I think what connects to my leadership and training journey was starting an academy at AIG.
Oh, wow, okay.
And that academy then trained, I'll say, hundreds of agents. And it was not just on insurance, but because we started just on insurance, said, that's okay, fine. These people are technically sound. They all have their qualifications, but we need the soft skills.
Yeah.
We need, how do you dress? How do you interact with people? How do you communicate? How do you show up? How do you, just the small, subtle things that we are never told. And we put up that
academy. How did you set up the academy? Just as an in-house training?
It was in-house training, but in partnership with other, you know, College of Insurance,
okay.
The technical training side. And then some of the soft skills, I trained on the soft skills, but also brought in other people to come and give their own experience.
Okay.
Because then you also want to draw from other people's
perspectives. Of course. And we will talk about that. But let's talk about the how to dress point, because I've noticed, Catherine, every time I meet you, and in all the pictures, you have a flower in your hair. Tell us about that signature look of yours.
I've been in the financial sector for all my life. Well, insurance is within the financial sector, and I just found them too serious to start.
Too corporate.
Too corporate. I say, we've got to add color to life. Life is meant to be amazing, and even if you're driving results and being serious, you need to put life into it. So I just put some color and life into what I do, and it's not just in my dressing, but it is also in my attitude, the way I approach things too.
Excellent. I wanted to ask you also, when you were younger and now coming into AIG and then starting your academy and starting the training, what character trait do you think that you had or skill that has now brought you along that path? What did you think you had? Is it resilience? Is it hard work and ethic?
One is discipline. Two is ethics. And that I got from both my parents. You know, they said, if you want to do something, do it well or don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and then making a difference in people, helping people. It gives me, takes me on another high, you know, to make a difference, you know, on people. So, and then also dressing and timekeeping as well.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Dressing, well, you were definitely on time today. Time. Yeah.
I always keep time. I think keeping time is saying to the other person, I respect you. Yeah. So that and dress the part. If you're going to church, if you're going to work, if you're going to see an important client, then dress the part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So once you developed the academy, is that what then propelled you to the managing director position?
Well, many things. I remember once when I became head of distribution and marketing. So more or less it propels you to a general management kind of role, because you're not just dealing with sales, you're dealing with recruiting people, HR aspects come in, operational issues come in, a lot of those. So I was exposed much more. Now you start also looking at the P&L and the financial side of the organization. You start also being exposed to the strategic side of the business.
Yeah.
And, you know, then I realized I wanted to become more. I wanted to take, you know, a bigger role.
Yeah.
I wanted to run an organization, but I didn't know how, and I needed to know what true leadership is. Well, I thought, yeah, I think I'm a leader, but what is this leadership thing? So I, Sandeep Bindra has just started his Fast Forward program and had just run for 1 year.
Yeah.
So, and my husband, you know, had gone into the Fast Forward program, and he said, you must go to this program. And I went to Sandeep Bindra and he told me, you know, this program is only for CEOs and C-suit, you know, high C-suit level. So I think you need to sort of rise in your
career. So, before you come.
This is when I'm coming.
Yeah.
And he asked me, why do you think you're qualified to come? I said, because I want to be a CEO.
Yeah.
If I want to be a CEO, I must hang out with CEOs, figure out what they're reading, figure out what they're doing, how they make decisions. I mean, really, how do they think? How do they behave? Mm-hmm. So I need to interact with them. And that's why I want to come to this program, because then it is...
It's like a gateway.
Of them,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So Sunny said, okay, fine. I mean, I can't beat that. And he allowed me to join the program. And I think that was my turning point. And he became a mentor to me, still is, and a good friend who mentors me, you know, around leadership and what true leadership is.
Yeah.
So that's where truly my journey began. And I said, if you truly want to be a leader, then you must invest in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You must, because we had to take a loan. We didn't have the money. We had to take a loan and pay it over a period of time. But that's investing in yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I would advise people is that whatever you want to be, don't wait for somebody else to invest in you. Invest in yourself.
The loan was to take the course?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it was that expensive?
I mean,
we
couldn't afford it.
Okay. You
know, to pay the lump sums.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, invest in yourself. If you're going to do it, do it. Yeah. And this is a good lesson for 2024. Yeah, if you're going to do something, you need to invest in yourself. Yeah. So moving on from the, okay, let's talk about the managing. Did you enjoy that position? What was it like? Was it everything that you dreamed of coming from the Fast Forward program?
First of all, I think at that particular point, I wanted to quit. I thought I had done whatever. I was general manager at that particular point in time. And the regional boss came and said, we are coming for a board meeting. We want to see you. I'm like, what have I done? You know, you start thinking, okay, what happened?
Yeah.
What have I done or not done?
Mm-hmm.
That they want to meet me, and they met me with our then managing director, who is also my big mentor and really a role model for me, Jaffa Lende.
Okay.
And they met me and said, Jaffa Lende is retiring and we have proposed that you become managing director. I said, wait a minute, just give me a few seconds. And I went to the toilet, you know, to the washroom and said, did I hear right?
Yes, you did.
So that's how my journey began. And, I think your self-doubt always kicks in. Will I do a good job? Will I be a good leader? Okay, this is what I asked for, but God, you've brought it so quickly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But if people hear that even Catherine was doubting herself, then who else is confident, right?
Yeah, I coach many people, many executives, and, you know, self-doubt, you know, I think it's also good, so long as it doesn't paralyze you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means you care. I think a little self-doubt says, I care.
Yeah.
So I want to do a good job, and it means that you're putting a plan around, you know, what you think you need to do better, that you want to listen more.
Yeah.
You want to, you know, immerse yourself more to what you could do better.
Yeah.
So a little self-doubt is good. So that's how my managing director journey began. And it has its ups and downs. You don't know everything. And I always say this, that probably in hindsight, what could I have done better? Ask. At times, you think if I ask, they will think, oh, was I the right person to get this job? Was I, you know, will they think that I, you know, I'm the right person to do this job, or I'll look stupid?
Yeah.
If you don't know, just ask. And asking will accelerate your delivery of results. It will avoid embarrassments. It will avoid, you know, you feeling that you're not doing a good job.
Yeah.
So I think that's, in hindsight, what I would say I would have done better is ask. Now I do ask.
Now you ask.
Oh, yeah.
And I will learn to ask. So how many years were you managing director for?
I was managing director for about 5 years, 4.5 in AIG.
Okay.
And then I worked in AIG for 17 years.
That's an amazing record.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 17 years. And I truly enjoyed every bit of it. Yes, there are ups and downs. But, you know, in hindsight, you always say that the downs are what makes you.
Yeah.
They're the ones that truly are defining moments for
how you pick yourself up from the downs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what you learn from the downs.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked for 17 years, left AIG in 2019. And then, you know, I decided, that's it. That I'm done. I'm done here. Then 2 months, let me just say, I found myself a CEO of Jubilee Insurance.
Yeah.
And carried them through, you know, the transition to Allianz.
To the merger, yeah.
To the merger with Allianz. And after 2 years, called it quits.
Okay.
To go to my real passion. What I didn't say is that actually when I was just beginning my career in MediPlus, or just when we got married, is that we brought in a franchise, a Dale Carnegie franchise, training franchise. And it ran for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We trained. I was training. I was a trainer. I was trained as
so
a trainer.
So this was my husband was at the same time as you were doing the MediPlus role?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So we were, my husband and I were training.
Okay.
He brought in a franchise, Dale Carnegie, from the US. And that's where my passion for training. Every time I trained, got a high,
you know,
because people give feedback or thank you for this. Did I do anything?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where my passion began. But then we decided to sell the franchise because we said, you can't give what you don't have. We didn't have any leadership experience at all. I was 25 years old. We didn't have any.
I have to say, though, there was a lot of foresight in that. For a young couple to start a training or buy a franchise in training.
Yes.
Not having had the experience, I mean, that's what's
Yes, quite some ambition.
Ambition,
there. But okay. I think it's once you realize you don't know, you don't have what you need.
Yeah,
it's good to realize it early and go and look for it. So we sold off the franchise and decided to go and really get what was required.
The professional experience, yeah.
Exactly. And that's why I've come back. And now I am certified by John Maxwell in his training and many others coming up in 2024.
Yeah.
And started my company, Auto Solutions Group, which is a training house in leadership. I also do consulting in governance and strategy, as well as executive coaching, because I am a product of mentoring and coaching.
Okay. Why the name Otis? What does Otis mean?
Otis is a Latin word for sunrise.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is. In fact, I wanted my company to have something to do with sunrise, but every sunrise was taken by everybody.
So. Well, I think Otis is much better than sunrise. I think it sounds much worse. Yeah.
It has a swag, I guess. Mm. So it means sunrise. And why sunrise? Because it's only at dawn when hope comes, when start seeing opportunities.
It's always darkest before the dawn.
Exactly. Yeah. It's when you're coming out from the darkness and you're like, gosh, I need something. And I'm hoping that is what, when you experience me, when you experience our training, that's what comes out. Hope, opportunity, helping you move on. Actually, my big word in my training is momentum. Mm-hmm. Regardless of how dark it is, just move one little step. Just continue moving.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that Otis experience gives you momentum.
I'm so glad I asked you that question, because I think it changes the way in which you see it.
Yeah.
And it changes the perception. And I think you should say that more often, because it really does when you understand that it's an uprising in yourself. But let's talk about the John Maxwell principles, because I think what I want people to get from this session is really an understanding of the principles and how you can then adapt them as we reset to 2024. Yeah. So what are those principles that lead us to being better leaders, better in our management of people, better in our awareness of ourselves?
And I would sub it as this: adding value to self and adding value to others. Mm-hmm. Because you can't add value to others as a leader if you're not adding value to yourself, if you're not growing, if you don't know self, if you're not self-aware, you can't add value to yourself. And that means if you're not growing, what you're doing, as John Maxwell says, is that you're putting a lid on others.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not growing, then the people below you can't go. And you also can't give any more than you have. So you're putting a lid on yourself, putting a lid on other people. So you need to grow so that then the people below you grow. People leave people, they don't leave organizations. They leave people because they're not growing. Your leader is not growing, and hence, okay, let me bypass it, just go and grow elsewhere. That's more or less the statement that they're saying. I'm not growing. I'm stuck here. If you're not growing, and it doesn't mean just by title or promotion, but you're not empowering them. You're not listening to them. You're not encouraging them, you know, to do much more than they could. You're not unlocking, you know, their potential. So the DNA of John Maxwell is adding value to others. But first, before you add value to others, you must add value to yourself and grow. And that's really sort of very foundational in everything that we do.
Yeah. And what are the practical steps that need to be implemented? If I'm talking to you today and I need to start unlocking some of that value within myself, what are the practical steps that I can take?
It always starts with self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, whether it is, you know, talking to people. In fact, just through this podcast, I'm thinking, the things that I'm saying, I'm still sort of getting insights about myself, talking more about yourself, asking people, you know, who am I? What could I do differently? How am I impacting people? Sitting down to reflect. Actually, reflection is a big thing around self-awareness. Sitting down to say, how was 2023? What did I do well? You know, what could I do better? You know, what's missing? You know, it's, do I need a coach, a mentor, somebody to work with me, do, you know, what could I add into my life to become better? So self-awareness, and whether it is through that or informal structures by doing a self-awareness sort of personality indicator. Some of them are free, you know, in on the internet. Myers-Briggs is free in the internet. I am a DISC personality indicator consultant, and, you know, we do the DISC personality indicator. And in more or less, that's telling you who you are, what's your personality, what are my strengths. Actually, what your personality is more or less telling you, what am I good at? You know, how am I wired? What are my strengths? And what are not my strengths? And how could I connect with people who are not wired like me so that then they can complete me?
Yeah. So I think the difference between the Myers-Briggs one and the DISC one, which I've done, or I've done both, is that the Myers-Briggs one tells you your personality as if it's an ongoing thing. And then the DISC one gives you different types of personalities, or three different, depending on your heightened state or different states that you are, depending on your situation and in work. Tell us why that is more effective, or perhaps, you know, it can lead to better results.
Yeah. I've done quite a number, you know, being a trainer. Obviously, you've got to check. I've done quite a number of the personality indicator reports. They more or less give me the same answer.
Yeah.
The difference with DISC, it gives you three perspectives. It gives you who you are, or what you're naturally inclined, or what how your personality, how you're wired, you know, as a person, and what your strengths are. But it adds two new perspectives. How you're behaving in public, how the current environment is affecting your personality. And it's very situational. You could be in an environment that is toxic, and you don't know that you're behaving in a certain way, or you're suppressing your strengths, and you're not bringing the very best in your strength.
Yeah.
So the DISC will be able to pull that out and tell you, okay, this is what's happening. Probably, yes, you're aware, but at times there are people I've talked to and say, oh, I didn't know it was this bad. You know, I'm suppressing my strength, and I'm not bringing myself, my best self, you know, to work, or even in my interactions and relationships, either at work or at home. And this is how it's affecting my relationships with my friends and my kids and my spouse and things like those. And one needs to be aware of that. So we bring that out, and then we do a plan. You know, what could you do about it? Probably at times you can't change the environment, so what could you do about it? And then it also gives you a perspective. How do you behave under pressure? You know, at times you've known very well how to navigate, you know, pressure situations. I guess in law firms, it's pressure through you and through.
Well, sometimes it's more pressure. And to be honest, when you're under pressure, it's the worst, the worst personality trait, to be honest, for me.
Yeah. And at times you've learned how to navigate, so more or less it's not affecting you. But for some people, you know, when they're under stress, they become paralyzed, or, you know, or they just, you know, go on a different tangent.
Yeah.
And it's good for you to know, so that then you figure out, yes, I'm under pressure. How could I, you know, navigate that? So then we combine that with now a whole process of coaching to help you sort of plan that out much better.
Yeah. And if you have taken the test and you now understand, or you at least you're getting to the understanding of yourself, how do you then bring that into your team? Or if you're a leader, how do you make sure that you implement it into the workplace so that it's effective for you?
Yeah. So self-awareness is not just information that you keep to yourself. It's something that you practically use. So once I understand how I'm wired, then I understand also how other people are wired. You know, you also take that lesson and figure out, okay, how are the people I'm leading? How are they wired? What's their personality? Mm-hmm. And then you start understanding how to connect with them. So I'll give you a practical example. When I became managing director, I am a dominant personality, you know, so strategic, big picture, natural leader, so to speak. So I'll look at the big picture and everything. If I have 50, 60% of the information, I'm good to go. I'll make the decision very quickly. My secondary personality is an influencing person. So I'm an external person. You know, I love people and go talk. I hate being behind the
scenes.
Yeah, I don't think I'll do very well in an offer. You know, I like being out there. So then I quickly realized that a lot of my board members were compliant, that the compliant detailed personality.
Yeah.
And I had to now sit back and say, oh gosh, I have got to do a lot of work, you know, making sure that when I go to board meetings, even my board packs have to have some level of detail.
Yeah.
I don't think that we give a 100-page document kind of board pack, but what information are they looking for? It has to be very specific, and they're going to ask me, how did you get to that?
Yeah.
Or if you're promising this number, how are you going to give us a rundown of how to do that? So, well, let me just say my first two board meetings were a bit of a disaster with going back and forth. Then I realized I really needed to give the detail, and I needed to surround myself with people who had the details. So my CFO, my head of legal, my head of compliance, you know, were very detailed people. And I immersed myself, you know, really spending time with them, understanding the process and all those things. But also even the way we structured the board packs also changed, so that then, because majority of my board members were detailed people. So something else that I learned and that helped me in dealing with that, my personality and their personality, and for us to complete each other, is to have the meeting before the meeting. So the audit chair, I met the audit chair a week before. Once the board pack was out, I met him to go through the board pack. So I make my board meetings quite easy.
Much easier. So you understood what they wanted before the meeting happened.
I give them the answers, you know, more or less before.
Okay.
And the answers that I didn't have, then, you know, I went back, give them the answers even before. So there were less questions at the board meeting. So that's one of
But if you're like the leader in, I guess what the question is if you're the leader in a team, like for example, I'm the partner in my team, I'm influencing the way in which everyone else is working. So who is influencing who, and how do you meet that delicate balance? Because I probably am probably more compliant, and detail orientated, and maybe there are people in my team who are more dominant and less detail oriented. But now I'm setting that tone. So how do we meet that balance within a team?
All right. And I think it's the essence of completing each other, knowing that you don't have all the strengths.
Yeah.
Remember, the personality is not just labeling people influencing or steady or compliant. It's about the strength behind that personality.
Yeah.
So you will appreciate that the compliant people will need the detail, but the steady people are the people who are the supportive kind.
Yeah.
Once they understand and believe in your vision, they will support you, and they are loyal, you know.
Yeah.
So how do you communicate to them? So it's all about communicating and connecting with people of different personalities. So once you understand the different personalities, how do you communicate to them so that then they bring their strengths to the table?
Yeah.
And then you are able to achieve the results that are needed within the team.
Yeah.
So for you as a leader is to understand and appreciate, who am I? What is my team? What's missing? And how do we connect? You know, how do I communicate to them so that then everybody brings their strengths to the table?
And I guess, continue. Please go ahead. We're here to learn from you. I just had one question. Yeah. Does it start from the recruitment stage?
Yes, it does. I mean, you've got to understand, what do you need in the team?
Mm.
What is required in the team? So that even you bring in the essence of personality, you know, even in the recruitment, in the recruitment stage. But going back to you as the partner or the leader in the team, I guess what is very, very crucial is increasing the level of influence and trust. Actually, why you start with self-awareness is so that then you can raise the level of influence and trust. John Maxwell talks about the five levels of leadership. And, you know, it level one, he says, you always start leadership from a title perspective.
Yeah.
So you're given a title, partner, I don't know, head of this, chief this, and all those things. All that is good, but that doesn't mean that people are truly going to follow you. They will follow you because they were told that's your boss, and they'll be like, 8 to 5, we'll come, whatever. But I think the biggest difference in a leader comes when you start creating and connecting with people, when you start raising the bar of relationship and increasing the level of influence and trust. So from a title, then John Maxwell says level two is relationships. You must start creating relationships, caring about people, making people feel you care.
Yeah.
That you understand who they are, you know, that you understand, I've got a sick child and I can't come to work. Okay, fine. You go ahead, blah, and I trust that you will come back and deal with
what
needs to be done at work, that you care. And then level three is results, that you actually show people that through people you can achieve results.
Yeah.
Now, the delicate balance is between relationship and results, because there are some people who are very good at relationships, but they will not push people to accountability
or
results. Or there are some people who are very results-driven, but they will do it
in a very non-relationship way.
Without relationship. Yeah. So to me, what John Maxwell says, and to answer your question, in leadership, is balancing relationship and results, so that then people feel that we can actually achieve the results in a caring environment. I'm being empowered. My leader cares about me. So it's those two. And then there's level four, which is reproducing leaders. So yes, we've achieved results.
Level four is reproducing leaders within your own team.
Exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because I always ask leaders, do you have a successor? Yeah. Because if you don't have a successor, then it means you're, again, putting the lead on people. They're going to leave you. So do you empower them? Do you train them? Do you make them believe in themselves? Do you leave them? Do you delegate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because delegation was one of my biggest problems in my leadership journey, because I thought I'm the only one who can do things properly. I don't think they'll understand, and I don't have the patience to train them. So that was one thing that I really had to work on in my leadership journey, to get to a level four leader of reproducing leaders. And the last one is pinnacle leadership, which is the Wangari Maathais of this world. What kind of footprints are you leaving behind? What do you represent as a leader? And I guess we are all on that journey.
Amazing. Amazing. I think we've learned a lot in a very short space of time. I also wanted to ask you, in terms of dealing with different generations within a team, how do you manage that gap? And is there a gap, or is it the same formula works, relationships and results?
Well, personality is just one way of understanding self, but you've got to go to the level of emotional intelligence, you know, which is beyond just understanding self. You've got to understand others and beyond. But that generational diversity is now becoming a big thing. I think right now we have about five generations.
Yeah. Y, Z. Millennials, all of those beta.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's the youngest, it's called the...
is it not?
The COVID.
Is it Alpha?
It's not at work.
Okay.
Yet, it's
not
Alpha.
Okay.
It's not at work.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But frankly, when you think about those kids who don't necessarily go to high school and whatever, they're doing some informal jobs. Mm-hmm. And somehow you will see them in the work space, or... more or less in the economic activity,
so
to speak.
Yeah.
So there are five generations, but how do you navigate this? Because what happens is that each generation views the other generation from their own lenses. Yeah. So my advice is, first remove your own lens, put their own lens, and figure out, why are they arguing that way? Why are they making decisions that way? Why are they saying they don't want to come to work? Just give me my job. Let's see you on Friday. I will deliver, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And is it? And for me, I'm thinking, really? I need to see you sitting on a desk. And I know a lot of organizations actually had great problems during COVID, when they were told people have to work from home. And our generation, and probably the older generation, were thinking, no, people must come to work. We must see them. If they work from home, they will not be working. And we had to change our perspective totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what I would say is that each generation needs to understand the other, why they are behaving in the manner that they're behaving. There's a book called A New Kind of Diversity, you know, that talks about generations, you know, how do you navigate the generation diversity at work, and you know, because we need to change. For example, the perks that were given. You say, okay, will have school fees or medical insurance. They say, I don't have medical insurance. I'm too healthy and young. I don't get sick. Can you translate that into money?
Yeah.
Obviously, there are boundaries. But I think what I would say is remove your lenses, put the lenses of the other generation and figure out why are they behaving
the way that they are,
the way that they are, rather than judging and condemning and having stereotypes. We need to remove those stereotypes and figure out why are they behaving, or what is in their environment. You know, we are the parents of the Gen Zs.
Yeah.
You know, we are the ones who raise them that way. So we need to take their lenses. But I think the other advice is that for the older generations, accept reverse mentoring.
Yes.
Accept reverse mentoring. There is so much that you can learn from that other generation, you know, that can help you even navigate better, that can help you move from, you know, the levels of leadership, from reproducing leaders to pinnacle leadership.
Yes.
Just because you are reverse mentored.
Yes. I think that's very important. I have a reverse mentor. Well, I have mentorship, so I understand that. Okay. So as we start the new year, we're looking for a reset. We're looking to refresh the way that we're working. We're looking, what are the practical tips that you can give us to implement going forward? First thing.
Well, there are many things, but I would say I will narrow it down to one: reflection. Many times we are just, you know, running and starting the year, or, oh gosh, it's 8th of January.
Let already.
Me get back to work. Yeah, it's 8th of January. Let me get back to work. You know, we did a plan sometime in October. It's time to implement it. But at times, I think what I have found very refreshing, and not just at the beginning of the year, beginning of the week, beginning of the day, beginning of a quarter. We do that for companies. We do a lot of resetting every quarter, every end of month. How did we do? Do you do that for yourself, you know, and without going into, I don't know, you know, all those vision boards and all those things? What I would say, just sit and reflect. Three things: what works, what's not working, what's missing.
Yeah.
If you get into that habit, either every evening, if that's too much, you know, just do it even informally every end of week. What worked this week? What did not work? And what's missing? What could I add? It could be there's some friendships I need to deal with, or I need to get a mentor, or I've always said I want to go back to university and do that degree or upskill myself, or I've always said, I don't want to talk about health. You always talk about the health part.
Yeah.
But, you know, I need to grow in some area, whether spiritually or career-wise, or I need to save more, you know. I need to manage my expenses, you know. Whatever it is for you, those three questions: reflection, what's working, what's not working, what's missing.
That's very important. And I just want to ask, as we close, is there a difference between the way that you think in work and the way that you think in life? Or do you think you package the whole thing together?
Okay. I think for me, you're one person. Everything is intertwined. If career is not working, something else is not working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I don't fix my health, I'll not have the energy to drive myself in my career.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't fix my finances, then I'm going to be under pressure, you know, in some way or form, to try and do like 3 jobs or 4 jobs, you know, to try and balance that. Then what am I then good at? You know, if my mental and spiritual health is also not stable, then I say that you're one person, and hence you need to think as, you know, wholesome as you're one.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I don't think that there is a life that you lead you know, at home, and another life that you lead at work and whatever. I think your personality cuts through, your values cut through, your character cuts through. You can't say that I'll have integrity at work and not have integrity at home, that I will be a better communicator at home and not a good communicator at home. All those things cut through in all spheres or aspects of your life. So to me, I don't think there is that person at work and that person at home. I just think that your values are your values, your character is your character, if you're consistent in everything you do, if there's a specific value system that you have, it cuts right through.
Okay, let's talk to the person who thinks they've got everything figured out. They're fine, 2024 is starting with a bang. What kind of introspection is needed for them?
I guess it's to know that life is very situational. You can't get it all together, and there's uncertainty. You don't know what the economy is going to look like. You don't know what life will throw at you. You don't know, even in our careers, there's so much changing. I think also in the legal field, there's so much. The legislation is changing, like, every day, people are changing, the people who come into your lives. Think about your clients too. Their demands are changing, think about your kids. Your kids are growing, and they were not teenagers. Now they're teenagers. Then, it's a new life phase. So I don't think there's anybody who can say, I have it all together, because life is very situational. Things change, life changes, and you've got to figure out, how do you navigate? Are you equipped?
Yeah.
Are you fully equipped?
Yeah.
To navigate those changes. And when they say, are you fully equipped? It then means that we are on a continuous journey of learning. And learning is through speaking to people, books, really immersing yourself, being present to learn, through your journey.
Yeah.
So I think my advice is, life changes, and I think one has to be well equipped. And well equipped means that we are on a journey. That's everything that I do. I always put the perspective, I'm on a journey.
And the person who is in complete disharmony at the moment and thinking that they can't get it together in 2024.
It's possible. Okay. I think it's just a mindset shift. And I think, going back to what I said about reflection, I think if you sit and reflect, you will actually see possibilities. If you truly believe you can make it, it's first of all a mindset change and the attitude that it is possible. I would go back to reflection. If you reflect what's working, because there's so much that is working, and don't feel that you're proud or you're gloating, or, if things are working, they're working. If these are my strengths, these are my strengths. If these are the things I'm good at, these are the things that I'm good at, and write them down, and celebrate them, tell other people as well. So that's working. Also, what's not working, meaning what could I do better? It's not about beating yourself up. It's about what could I do, because you're not helpless.
Yeah.
You're not hopeless. You have a lot of help. Actually, if you sit down and look around, you have a lot of help. So what's not working and who could help?
Yeah.
And then what's missing? Yeah. I think if you go through that, to me, there's endless possibilities.
And I guess momentum, because you have to keep going. Yes. There's no other choice. Yes. What is your word for 2024? Your personal word, not the professional word.
My personal word is bloom.
Bloom.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. I haven't heard that yet. Oh, like the flower.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Catherine, we don't normally do tips and tricks for working well. So clues for younger people who are in the workplace and how you would do it yourself. Yeah. Work-life balance. Is there such a thing?
Yes, I think. I think there is. And I think once you think that I don't need to be a different person at home, at work, what I was talking about, then truly, I think because then people at home understand that, oh, this is peak season, so we'll give you a break.
Yeah.
Or we'll help you out here. But one thing I say is, I can only talk for women.
Yeah, of course.
is one thing that I think a tip that I did or had to figure out is to create a support system.
Yeah.
So the kind of house helps that I get, have to spend time training them, so that then they become, of great help. And one thing that I had from Anne Moriah, Deloitte, that I would want to repeat here: you don't have to buy every tomato that is cooked at home. There is Glovo, there is Mama Mboga, who you have bought, vegetables from.
I love that.
And you can tell her kama kawaida, and go and get a rider to deliver at home. You don't have to leave work at 6 and you're stressed and you now have to go shopping and whatever, than when you spend time with the kids.
Yeah.
So can you have done that in a smart way?
Yeah.
So that then, you know, that's a support system we already have.
Yeah.
Excellent. By every tomato.
I like it. Any other tip that you used when you were a managing director or otherwise?
Empowering people.
Mm-hmm.
Actually believing in people, believing that people can. And delegating.
Okay.
But for you to delegate, you absolutely have to believe that they can and spend time training them. I'm not a patient person, really. So I really had to breathe in, slow down, and train them. Because then I know that I can leave the day-to-day work being done and I can go and deal with strategic things. So, and that just doesn't work at work, it works at home as well. Even with your siblings, you don't have to be the one navigating everything in your family. You know, how could you train somebody else to do certain things? Your gardener, your house help, even your kids, you know, train them to do certain things so that you don't have to be the one doing everything. So
yeah.
To me, I think the biggest breakthrough for me in my managing director journey was believing that people can, adding value to them, which is the Maxwell DNA, John Maxwell DNA, in the Maxwell DNA, believing in people, adding value to them, empowering them so that then they also believe they can do it.
Amazing, yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's been such a great conversation and I think such a pace setter for 2024. Anyone who is looking to reset themselves, this has been a perfect conversation for that. So normally we do a quick fire round. I don't know, did you read the questions? I hope
I told you not to read it.
So this is a quick fire round, just to get to know you a bit better, Catherine. Okay, so beach or city holiday?
Beach.
Favorite place to visit?
Italy.
Oh, nice. Where?
Many places. I think for me, I'm Catholic, so Rome.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we covered that. Apple or orange?
Wow, orange.
Okay. A lot of people say apple. Okay. Anyway, pizza topping of choice? Pizza topping, if you like pizza.
Pineapple.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Favorite drink?
My favorite drink. Iconic, my kids call it herbal coffee.
What is it?
So I put cinnamon, cardamom, clove, and rosemary.
In your coffee?
Black coffee.
Wow.
Black coffee. I enjoy that.
Oh, nice. That no sugar, no honey.
No sugar, no honey.
The health benefits must be amazing. And that's why he has such glowing skin.
It wakes me up.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an amazing episode. You've been a great guest. Thank you for all your learning and your teachings. And I know a lot of people will benefit from this conversation. So thank you very much. Everyone, see you in February. Take care.